भगवद गीता 2.23 नैनम छिन्दन्ति शस्त्राणि नैनम दहति पावकः जैनम क्लेदयन्त्यापो न शोषयति मारुतः नैनम छिन्दन्ति शस्त्राणि न एनम दिस नॉट छिन्दन्ति शस्त्राणि दिस सोल एनम व्हाट इज सब्जेक्ट इज द सोल शस्त्राणि इट कैन नॉट बी पियर्स्ड बाय वेपन्स नैनम दहति पावकः इट कैन नॉट बी बर्न्ड बाय फायर न चैनम क्लेदयन्त्यापो It will not be withered away by water. Na shoshayati marutaha. It will not be dissolved by water. And it will not be withered away by the wind. Shoshayati marutaha. So now, earth, water, fire, air are the gross material elements. Ether, although it's classed as one of the gross elements, it's almost like a subtle element. It's the subtlest of the gross elements and it is largely unperceivable by the senses. Somewhat similar to the way the mind, intelligence and ego are not perceived by the senses. So, of course, the ether is the medium whose presence enables sound to be transmitted. So in that sense, the souls exist, the ether's existence is inferable. But the point is that ether being subtle is not talked about here. The four gross elements as weapons are talked about. And the emphasis that is made is that now, whatever items we make, whatever weapons anyone makes, they will basically combination of these. So even if we have something like an atom bomb or a chemical bomb, ultimately they are made using earth, water, fire, air. Now, the Bhagavad Gita uses the elemental theory of matter, analyzing matter into elements. Modern science largely uses the molecular theory of matter, or we could say atomic theory of matter, wherein matter is divided into fundamental particles. But either way, the point is that it is a combination of matter. Everything that exists in the material world is ultimately a combination of the material elements. And Krishna very categorically states that none of the material elements can destroy the soul. And the implication is that none of the combinations of the material elements can also destroy the soul. So, Arjuna, if you have some residual anxiety that some of the Divyastras, ordinary weapons may not destroy, but what about Divyastras? So even Divyastras in the divine or celestial weapons will also not be able to destroy the soul. So this is a further, we could say, somewhat illustrated example of the point of the soul being avinashi. That whatever, what are the things that could do vinash? So the things, none of them can do vinash of the soul. And if we see, these are the four things that can do this vinash of lot of material things. Weapons, they pierce the heart, even if a knife or arrow pierce the heart, or any other vital organ, the person can die. Similarly, so we have fire. When a house catches fire, especially if it's in a crowded locality, then it can become a devastating loss for not just that particular house, and its residents, but for many others also. People can get permanently scarred. If they at all survive, fires can be devastating. So, Nainam Chinni Shastrani, Nainam Dhati Pavakani, Chainam Klei Dayantyapo. Now, water may not seem very threatening. In fact, water actually we need to live. We need to drink and to wash and to cook and for so many, or to bathe. And so many other ways for to garden, to plow, to arrange the crops. So we definitely need water. But in that same water can be the cause of destruction when we don't realize that it is, if it comes in dangerous proportions, when there are floods, when there are tsunamis. And similarly, na shoshayati marutaha, that wind, if it comes as a tornado or as a hurricane or as a cyclone, there can be horrendous devastation. But none of that can affect the soul. So, through very clear, tangible measure or terms, Krishna is underscoring the indestructibility of the soul. And so how is this verse related with the previous verse? The previous verse was talking about how the body may well change for the better at death. Far from being of complete destruction, death may well be a welcome transition once we understand that the body is just like a dress for the soul. The question may come, yeah, okay, but sometimes while handling the dress, the person may also get damaged. You know, somebody is very roughly pulls out the dress, and that may hurt the body. So is there some way that while destroying the body, will the soul get hurt? So Krishna assures that no, even if you use the fiercest weapons to attack and to defeat and to... So here, Krishna, by giving multiple examples, is explicating the absolute indestructibility of the soul. Now, it's talked about in the negative sense. Nainam, nainam, nainam. Nainam chinnam chastrani, nainam dahati pavaka. So, nainam. Why is that talked about? This is another example of the naiti-naiti method for explaining the nature of the soul. And its difference from matter is illustrated by the repeated usage of the naiti. So, this way, whatever conceptions that Arjuna may have had about the soul, which are actually extrapolated onto spirit from matter, an extrapolation that is unwarranted because nature of spirit is drastically, almost antipodally. Antipodally means almost entirely opposite to that of matter. So to counter such extrapolations, Krishna tells Arjuna here that nainam, nainam, nainam. Four times in each line, nainam is coming. So now of course, nainam, nainam comes in the first two lines, but the na comes in the next two lines as well. Na, nachinam, idyantyapo, shoshayati marutaha. So na cha enam is actually nainam only. Na, shoshayati. So essentially, na is coming again and again. So, often, if we do not understand properly the difference between the body and the soul, then we drag bodily conceptions onto the soul, or material conceptions onto spirit, and therefore, we are not able to make tangible advancement in spiritual life. We don't take spiritual life as a serious pursuit, because material conceptions cling on to us and we are unable to take the take the adventurous leap of faith necessary to attain the world of spirit. So the Bhagavad Gita setting of a war where a spiritualist or a spiritual leader, a spiritual warrior has to kill in order to do spiritual duty, a social duty which is also spiritual duty, and that illustrates in a most dramatic way how the spiritual way of looking at things can be quite different from the material way of looking at things. And it is not that it's materially incomprehensible. Materially also, if one thinks deeply, why the Kauravas need to be killed can be understood. But Krishna is not arguing here based on the material morality of the situation, although that argument can also be made. But he's arguing based on the spiritual reality of the situation. And by using such a dramatic setting, the Gita forces us to confront the conflict between the material conception and the spiritual conception head on, and thereby help us to make the difficult choice of choosing the spiritual over the material on those occasions when the spiritual and material come in conflict. In general, the spiritual and material can be harmonized, and that is the expertise of the spiritual master, that is the expertise of the Vedic spiritual culture, Vedic culture in general, and they will work harmoniously if we do carefully, sensitively under guidance. But there are times when the material conception and spiritual conception may conflict, and the Bhagavad Gita, by using this dramatic example of having to kill one's relatives and then emphasizing the indestructibility of the soul, drives home forcefully that when the spiritual reality calls for a particular course of action, one should not let material sentimentality hold one back from that principled and enlightened course of action. Thank you.